The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're doing something a bit different. We're not looking at, you know, the latest headlines. We're going way back to the roots, really.
Mm-hmm. The intellectual roots of, well, so much of our modern world. We're unpacking William Allen's fantastic guide, Classical Literature. A very short introduction.
Right. And the mission for this deep dive is pretty clear, isn't it? It's about tackling Allen's big question, why should we today still bother reading ancient Greek and Roman literature?
Exactly. Because Allen's argument is powerful. He says, look, strip away the dusted history, and what you've got isn't relics. It's the actual framework, the foundation for everything from how we think about politics to how we tell stories.
It's like the source code, the blueprints, mm-hmm. Homer, Sophocles, Virgil. They didn't just write compelling stuff. They basically invented the language for so much modern thought and storytelling. You get them, you get what comes after.
Absolutely. It all clicks into place a bit more.
So who's our guide on this massive journey, this thousand-year literary trek?
Well, our author is William Allen. He's a seriously distinguished academic, McConnelling Fellow, tutoring classics at Oxford. You know, his whole career has been deep in Greek, epic poetry, Homer especially, and Athenian tragedy.
Okay, so he definitely knows this stuff. But what makes his take useful for, say, someone listening who hasn't read the Iliad since school, or maybe never?
That's the key thing, I think. He manages to bridge that gap between, like, deep academic knowledge and someone who's just curious. He's not just reporting findings. He's a real advocate. He genuinely believes these ancient stories still have immense power to light up our lives today.
But let me push back slightly. Is he maybe too much of an advocate? Does he sort of gloss over the critiques, you know, the arguments that this is literature from elite, often slave-owning societies? How does he handle that context?
That's a fair question.
Mm-hmm.
He does address the context, yeah. But his main focus is on what he calls reception, how these texts have been read, argued with, and reused over centuries.
Ah, reception. So how later generations interacted with them.
Precisely. He acknowledges the historical framework, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But he argues that the questions these texts raise about justice, fate, power, love those questions, still resonate powerfully, regardless of their origins. His goal seems very pedagogical. He wants to give you, the reader, the tools to get into these ideas without needing Greek or Latin or feeling buried under centuries of scholarly debate.
Okay, so he's handing you the key to the vault, essentially.
You could say that, yeah.
Now, one thing that struck me was the book's structure. I mean, we're talking a huge span of time, right? Roughly 1,000 years. Homer around 750 BCE, all the way to the later Roman Empire. That's massive.
It is. And instead of just marching through history chronologically, which could get, frankly, a bit dry.
Yeah, a bit like a textbook.
Right. He goes thematic. He groups things by ideas, but universal concerns.
Like what kind of themes?
Things like love and sex, the role of the gods, fate versus free will, duty, heroism. By doing that, he connects these ancient texts directly to things we still grapple with today. It makes it much more immediate, more accessible.
So you don't need a classics degree to follow along, just curiosity.
Exactly. Curiosity about where our big ideas come from. He starts right at the beginning, too, defines what classical literature even means, how the canon formed, the shift from stories told aloud, you know, oral culture, to written texts.
And he tackles some complex stuff early on, like how Sappho or Ovid explored love and sex.
He does. And that flows into maybe the most crucial theme for him, this idea of reception we mentioned. He keeps coming back to it. The legacy isn't some dusty monument you admire from afar.
It's alive.
It's a living tradition, constantly being argued over, reinterpreted, remade by every new generation. That ongoing dialogue, for Allen, is the proof of its enduring power.
Okay, let's dig into the core of the book then, how literature actually worked back then as a social, even political tool. Let's start with Greek tragedy. We think theater, we think entertainment. But for the Athenians.
It was way heavier than that. Allen really drives this home. Athenian tragedy wasn't escapism. It was, and this is his phrase, a democratic institution. A place where the entire citizen body came together to confront the hardest, most troubling questions about life, society, and their city.
Wow. So mandatory civic education almost, through drama.
Kind of, yeah. The playwrights were essentially holding up a mirror, forcing the city to examine its own moral tensions, its own potential flaws. These plays were staged at the Festival of Dionysus, a huge public religious event. It was collective grappling with ethics, justice, the gods, how to govern.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Think of Sophocles' Antigone. It's a direct clash, right? Antigone's personal conscience, her sense of family duty and divine law, versus Creon's state decree. He forbids burying her brother. She defies him.
A classic dilemma. Individual versus the state.
Exactly. And the play doesn't give an easy answer. It forces the audience, the citizens, to debate. What are the limits of political power? When is disobedience justified? It's a public forum enacted through story.
Okay, so if tragedy was the debating chamber, what about myth? How did that function? Alan apparently reframes it quite a bit.
He really does. We tend to think of myth now as, you know, a false story or something primitive. But Alan shows that in the ancient world, myth was something totally different. It was more like a shared cultural language.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a dynamic, incredibly flexible symbolic language. Authors use these familiar stories about gods, heroes, monsters, not to report history, but to explore contemporary truths. Psychological truths, social truths. They could reshape the myths to talk about fate, morality, the chaos of life.
And the gods themselves fit into this. The Greco-Roman gods weren't exactly models of virtue.
Not at all. They were very anthropomorphic. Basically, superpowered humans, often flawed, jealous, angry, interfering. They weren't these distant, perfect, transcendent beings like in some other traditions.
Which makes them useful for drama, I guess.
Absolutely. That very unpredictability, their flaws, gave authors this incredible canvas for exploring the big existential questions. Think about the Iliad. The tension between the god pulling strings and the humans making choices allows Homer to ask, how much agency do we really have? Are we just puppets? Why do good people suffer? Literature, Alan shows, was the main arena for wrestling with these huge philosophical problems.
This leads nicely into heroism, which you mentioned. And for me, the contrast Alan draws between Greek and Roman ideas of the hero is maybe one of the most illuminating parts of the book, Achilles versus Aeneas.
It was fundamental. It reveals so much. In the Greek world, especially as shown in the Iliad, heroism is all about Cleos' individual glory, fame that lasts forever, and Minos Achilles' consuming rage.
Right. He puts his personal honor above everything. Even the success of the whole Greek army depends on his mood, almost.
His personal passion drives the epic. But then you look at the Romans. They were building an empire. They needed a different kind of hero, a different set of values.
Something more stable, more community-focused.
Exactly. Enter Virgil's Aeneas in the Aeneid. His defining quality is pietas. Now, that often gets translated as piety, but Alan explains it's much deeper. It's about duty, responsibility to the gods, to family, but crucially to the state, to the future of Rome.
So Aeneas has to sacrifice his own desires.
Radically so. The most famous example is leaving Dido, the queen he loves passionately in Carthage. He has to suppress his personal feelings because his destiny, his duty, is to found Rome. The Roman hero puts the collective, the state, first. Personal desire is secondary.
That shift is incredible. From Cleo's individual glory to Pieta's duty to the collective, you can see the different needs of the societies reflected right there in their epic heroes.
It's a stark and powerful contrast. And Alan doesn't just focus on poetry and drama. He also shows how rational prose develops, which is another huge legacy.
You mean things like speeches and history writing?
Yes. Oratory, the art of persuasive speech rhetoric, was absolutely vital in political life. Think of Demosthenes in Athens or Cicero in Rome. Their speeches shaped policy.
Masters of persuasion.
Definitely. But maybe the bigger leap towards, well, modern thinking comes with how they started writing history. Alan contrasts Herodotus, who was like this amazing, wide-ranging inquirer into different cultures and stories.
The father of history, but also maybe lies.
Well, he gathered everything. But then you get Thucydides, writing about the Peloponnesian War between Athens and Sparta. Thucydides did something revolutionary.
What was that?
He aimed for a much more rigorous, analytical, almost scientific account. He wasn't just recording events. He was searching for the underlying causes. He looked for explanations in human nature and power politics and rational factors, not just blaming the gods.
So he's trying to figure out the why in a systematic way.
Exactly. That move, analyzing society and conflict for rational causes, is basically the invention of political science, of analytical history as we know it, a huge step.
Okay, so pulling this together, what are the big takeaways Alan wants you, the reader, to get from all this? What are the core messages that still resonate?
Well, there are several key themes. The first one is crystal clear. Literature in the classical world was never just art for art's sake. It was deeply intertwined with social and political life.
Right. Tragedy as public discourse. Roman epic shaping national identity.
Precisely. And the reflection for us today is pretty direct, isn't it? our media, our narratives, our entertainment, they still constantly shape our values, our debates, our sense of who we are. It's the same dynamic.
That makes sense. What's another major theme?
The constant tension, the push and pull between the individual and the community. We saw it starkly with Achilles versus Aeneas, but it pops up everywhere in different forms.
Personal desire versus civic duty, my needs versus the group's needs.
That's the heart of it. It's this perennial question. How do you balance personal freedom, your own ambitions, your identity, with your responsibilities to others, to society? Allen shows the ancients didn't necessarily give easy answers, but they gave us powerful, enduring ways to frame and debate that very problem.
Which we are still debating constantly today.
Endlessly. And maybe a final key theme, especially strong in Greek tragedy, is that these texts embrace moral complexity. They resist simple answers, easy judgments of good versus evil.
Things are messy. Gray areas abound.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Characters make terrible choices under immense pressure. Fate plays a role. Intentions get blurred. And Allen suggests this is incredibly valuable. It teaches us that complexity is often the reality of human situations.
So it's like an antidote to simplistic thinking.
I think so. In a world that often pushes us toward black and white thinking, engaging with texts that explore these deep moral gray areas can be a powerful tool. It helps sharpen our critical thinking for navigating the genuinely complex issues we face.
Okay, let's make this really practical then. Beyond just being more culturally literate, how does engaging with, say, Cicero or Sophocles actually help someone in their, you know, day-to-day life or career?
Great question. I see two huge concrete benefits Allen points towards. First, intellectual growth, specifically enhanced critical thinking and persuasion. Seriously. By studying rhetoric, how Cicero built an argument, how Demosthenes persuaded an assembly, and by analyzing Thucydides' methods, you learn to take arguments apart. You learn to spot underlying assumptions, identify persuasive techniques, see hidden motives, and you learn how to build stronger arguments yourself. That's directly applicable whether you're writing a work proposal, debating politics, or even just trying to win an argument at home.
It's like mental weightlifting for argumentation.
Exactly. And the second benefit is more personal, focusing on emotional intelligence and empathy. Allen really sees Greek tragedy as a kind of school for the emotions.
A school for emotions? How does that work?
Think about it. When you engage deeply with characters like Oedipus, who suffers immensely, or Medea, who makes horrific choices out of passion and betrayal, you're not just observing, you're participating in that famous process Aristotle called catharsis.
The purging of pity and fear.
Right. It's a profound psychological workout. You explore extreme states of being, complex motivations, impossible dilemmas from a safe distance. Allen suggests this process expands your capacity for empathy.
Right.
It gives you a richer, maybe more compassionate understanding of why people, including yourself, do the things they do.
That's a powerful idea. Tragedy is empathy training.
I think it is.
This has been fascinating. What really comes through is how Allen manages to make these ancient texts feel, well, not intimidating. He shows they're full of passion, intelligence, real human drama, not just dusty footnotes.
Absolutely. For me, the big takeaway is how classical literature gives us the foundational vocabulary. It's the root system, the basic myths, genres, philosophical questions that underpin so much of Western culture. If you engage with the classics, you're simply better equipped to understand, well, almost everything else that follows. It makes you a sharper reader, a deeper thinker.
And the thing that really struck me, perhaps uncomfortably, is just how similar their struggles feel. The questions they wrestled with 2,000, 2,500 years ago about justice, fate, love, loss, power, they are startlingly close to our own questions today.
It's true. Allen really reveals the timelessness of the human condition. And that's ultimately why these stories, these poems, these plays will probably never stop feeling relevant.
A powerful reminder. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.